This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Thursday edition of Invest Talk. This is September 4th, and since it's Thursday, I have Justin Klein with me.
Great to be here, Steve.
Now, this is a two-way Invest Talk conversation. We're interactive. We'd like to hear from you, and you hear from us, ask us questions. So we welcome not only your questions, but your comments as well. If you want to hear about your investing experience, if we can, good or bad, doesn't matter. Most of us have both, by the way. And I'm not excluding myself. We all have, we all make mistakes, and we all have good and bad stories to tell. So whether you're listening on radio in California, online, or at our InvestTalk.com site, or you're a podcast subscriber, we welcome your participation. 888-99-CHART is the number. You can reach us right now, 888-992-4278. And we'll get to the phones in just a second. I talked yesterday about the value of college education, and remember, I put a dollar value on it, not me, the Federal Reserve in New York did, and he said that it was worth $300,000. Now, this is from your working life, you get $300,000. But that doesn't lessen the strain of paying the tuitions and fees. Remember, when I talked about it yesterday, he said it takes 10 years on average to pay that money back before it's worth it.
It's called the payback period. It's like any project.
So, yeah. So, and we know that in the last 10 years, costs have skyrocketed in colleges. We know that. Basic tuition in USC, by the way, is $43,722. And that doesn't include the $12,448 if you're going to live on campus, or the $1,500 for the books, or the $741 in other fees. Total $58,403.
Yeah, I remember I did this calculation with Jason in our office, because he went to USC. Mm-hmm. I went to Chapman University, at another private institution, and Chapman's up there too. I think it was exactly 10% less than USC.
Probably did but that
still,
on purpose.
Yeah, they probably did. But that's still over $50,000 a year for an education.
Now, according to Fidelity, a survey of 1,000 respondents, who have at least one grandchild, 18 or younger, 53% are already saving for or planning to start saving for the grandchild's college education.
Yeah, it's no longer just the parent. It's a whole family endeavor to save for
it's so
college these days. Yeah.
The median contribution, by the way, is $25,000. And 35% of those people, those respondents, half of those respondents, remember it's 53% of the 1,000 respondents, 35% of them said they're going to give $50,000
or more.
Huh. So what's also interesting concerning 47% of these same grandparents surveyed acknowledge they are worried about being able to save enough for their own retirement. Okay, so they're going to spend money on their grandchild's education, which I understand is very important, but they also at the same time don't know if they have enough for their own retirement. This is a tough situation. So you need to take a look and be very careful how you're going to do that. If you're going to give money to your grandchildren, you need to talk to a CPA first to talk about the tax consequences. You might want to talk to a money manager or a financial planner to figure out the impact on your retirement, in retirement. How bad is it going to be? How do you have it? Those kinds of things.
Yep.
So just be aware. Tomorrow on Invest Talk, we're going to talk about 529 college savings plans. Maybe have a better understanding how they work. But first, let's see if we can answer a question in our 24-hour listener line. Anybody can call anytime. 888-99-CHART is the number.
Hi, this is John from Walnut Creek. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the European zone starting their QE yesterday and what effects that has on our markets. I guess specifically with commodities, it seems like the value of the dollar is going up, the value of the euro is going down, and I don't know if I'm correct in saying that, does that cause commodities to go down overall? Thank you very much. I enjoy your show. Bye-bye. Well,
Justin and I were just talking about this just before the show. We talked about it early on today. What will the QE that ECB, European Central Bank, announced, Draga, what will that do to European assets? What will that do to the European market and the economy? Mm-hmm. And, I frankly think the answer is unclear. We don't know for sure. No one knows. Remember, QEs, what we're doing is we're looking at our QE program and saying, well, this is what it did here. Well, will it do the same thing there? I'm not convinced it will. What do you think, Josh?
Yeah, it's definitely a different situation, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how they execute that.
Yeah, they really didn't tell us, did they?
Yeah, they didn't tell us because it's not straightforward. You know, here in the United States, it was simple. You buy treasuries, and we love to stimulate the housing market. That's
well,
what
think,
the central
think
bank loves to do. So they want to buy mortgage-backed securities. So you buy those two things. Right. In Europe, you have a whole European Union with...
Which country's debt do you buy?
Yeah. Well, treasuries, you're buying U.S. debt. There's no other types of debt that our Fed should or probably would buy, right?
Right.
But in the Euro region... Okay, you have
by Spain,
over a dozen
Greece,
a dozen different countries with their own sovereign debt. So you buy sovereign debt of all those countries, some of those countries. Do you buy more of one country versus another? And then what other type of assets do you buy? Do you buy business loans? Do you buy car loans? Do you buy mortgage loans? What do you buy to monetize your all this debt that's going around in that?
And
in,
none of that,
that
was spelled out in his announcement.
Well,
none of that.
Yeah.
He just said that we will have a bond buying.
And they hired, was it State Street or Blacks? It hired some big investment bank to help them make this plan. But I think this is going to be a lot harder than most than the market's expecting it to be. Because, like I said, the complexity of that whole region. And then you have Germany, who doesn't really like the idea of QE. Maybe they're more warm to it than they have been in the past. But at the same time, you still have to lay out a plan that appeases them and also the rest of the Euro nations. So
in answer to his question, it's very difficult to know what kind of impact.
Now, the stronger dollar, it tends to have a dampening effect on commodity prices, right? Because the value of our dollar is stronger, so you can buy more commodities with that. And so you don't need to there's the value of commodities, price of commodities go down. For us, but where the final resting place of what Euro QE is going to do is, I think, very much up in the air.
Yeah, we don't.
And where is that? My question to you before the show: where is that money going to come from? You know, money's flowing in. You know, everyone chased treasuries, mortgage-backed securities as the Fed was buying them. Right, mm-hmm. That money came from somewhere. Where is that money gonna? Where is the money gonna come from to invest in the European assets that are?
Well, they might be. They might be selling. They could sell their position stocks. You know, but normally when you get a QE, at least in here in the United States, see, this is what makes it difficult. Here in the United States, the lowering of interest rates and then the easing of money means that assets will bubble up. Mm-hmm. All assets, stock assets. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be the same thing in Europe? See, but I'm not sure it will react the same way because it's not one entity. It's a bunch of countries.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
And a lot of different types of assets.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Where are we? It could be weak overseas economics that have probably helped the U.S., by the way, at least as much as it has hurt us. Their weakness does not necessarily, in the past, has hurt us. But can the U.S. economy go alone? Can it be the only dog that's moving forward? Because we're growing.
Yeah,
Europe
isn't. It used to be, the U.S. catches, gets the flu and the rest of the world catches a cold.
Right. But what happens when they catch the flu?
Yeah.
Like Europe?
Yeah.
What do we catch? Do we catch anything? I it seems like we should catch some kind, at least the sniffles.
At least the sniffles.
Yeah. So, but that's one of our main talking points today. Others, we're going to talk about the economic calendar. Some statistics have been released this week, and tomorrow we have the jobs report. So it's always important to look at it. In October, do you know what the big event is in October? How about the big event?
Halloween?
No. How about the big event in China or regarding Chinese stocks? What happens in October? I bet you most people don't know this, but there's a big change going to happen. And I want to talk about it. I mean, this change is going to be impactful, at least on the Chinese stock market. And finally, when the next housing bust hits, you can blame the bankers. Why do we say that? Now, that's the title of this article that I read. And as I read the article, I'm saying, why is that title that? I don't think you can blame the bankers. They're reacting to what they're told to react to by the people who oversee them. They're worried about, well, anyways, it's something I would like to talk about, this article, what the article is referring to, and why our housing recovery is kind of not very strong right now. It's kind of weak.
But by the way, the ECB did announce what type of securities they're going to buy.
Did they?
Asset-backed securities.
Oh, well.
But I mean, asset-backed securities are, like I said before, a mortgage-backed security is an asset-backed security. Car loans are an asset-backed security. There are asset-backed securities that are securitized by equipment.
How about securitized by the various governments?
Well, there has to be some sort of asset behind it. So it could be securitized by gold, but you can't just, you know.
It'll be interesting to see what they're doing.
It's going to start in October, but like I said, what type of asset?
Yeah, and whose assets?
Yeah.
Which country? Yeah. I could see a lot of politics going on behind the scenes there.
Yeah.
Why don't you help us, you know, particular countries? Help me. Help Spain, help Greece, help, mm-hmm. Wait a minute, help Italy? No, maybe, yeah, that kind of thing. There's a new way to participate in InvestTalk, by the way. It's our InvestTalk Twitter opinion poll. This week's question, looking at your whole investing experience, are you satisfied or disappointed with the results? And do you credit yourself, the expertise of others, or just good or bad luck? We'd love to read your answer on the program. Send it via Twitter now to @InvestTalk. That's with two T's, @InvestTalk. You can get your question to us anytime through that. You can also ask us a question at that Twitter account. Or the old-fashioned way, you can call us right now at 888-99-CHART.
Now let's get back to your questions. Have you signed up to be an InvestTalk Insider? You'll have access to all kinds of great resources, including a whole library of recorded webinars on a wide range of helpful topics. Sign up for free right now on InvestTalk.com.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So can the U.S. economy go it alone? Because Europe looks like they're falling into recession or very close to it. China has slowed down its growth, and they have debt issues. So those are the two other major blocks of economic activity in the world, besides us. Okay. Now, I'm not trying to discount South America or the rest of Asia or India. I'm not trying to discount that. But I'm talking about the major growth center was China, and it's slowing down to 7.5% or so from a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, 10% down to 7.5%. And Europe, Italy is in recession, and it just doesn't look like it looks like to me Europe is going to recession. That's one of the reasons why Draga is doing this QE from that area of the world. So we're growing. Can we continue to sustain that kind of growth?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple things that are positive about the weakness overseas, and one of them is commodity prices. Commodity prices are falling, so things are getting cheaper. Gas price, oil prices are going down. The price of steel and a lot of other iron ore and a lot of other commodities are falling, and that's going to help us because we're not the source of that weakness, right? But then there's the stronger dollar, which over the past 4 months the dollar's been getting stronger, but that's going to hurt our exports. And we're not an even though people think we don't export things.
We do.
We do. We're the largest exporter in the world.
Yeah. The economic news out of the non-U.S. markets is not good. With the purchasing managers surveys out for Europe and China and other places, they're all in declines. And remember, their purchasing manager surveys are important because they're more of a manufacturing center than we are.
Yeah, exactly. We're service-oriented.
Yeah, we're much more service-oriented. So maybe you want to talk about that a little bit more? Give us a call. 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Steve or Justin? You're the best person to ask it at 888-99-CHART. Now's the best time. Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Coming up on the next InvestTalk,
Pay attention to the fees and what federal policies on 529s should you be aware of. Understanding 529 college savings plans, that's our talking point for Friday, September 5th. And we hope you'll listen to that podcast. And be sure to try our new free risk analysis tool. It can help a lot, and it's right there on our website. Just look for the blue box on the homepage for free personal risk analysis on investtalk.com. Invest Talk continues on this Thursday. Pay attention to the fees and what federal policies on 529 should you be aware of. Understanding 529 college savings plans. That's our talking point on the next Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART is how to get through to Steve right now. You name the topic.
Now, don't hesitate to call us with your questions or share your investing experience. Tell us about the mix in your portfolio. Maybe we'll be happy to talk about that. 888-99-CHART is our number. You can reach us at any time.
Hi, my name is Manu. I'm calling for Steve. I'm wondering where the gold is going. Luckily, I sold all, but I don't know if the bottom or is it going to reverse or not. Thanks. Bye.
You know, it's always hard to tell. Remember, the dollar has been very, very strong recently, and that, of course, is not putting a lot of pressure, letting the pressure of the gold go up. But if you take a look at gold, and then take a look at dollar, you can look at a chart, UUP for gold, for the dollar and GLD for gold. You'll see that the dollar has skyrocketed, and that usually pushes down gold prices far, you know, significantly, and it hasn't. Now, gold has been weak. Yeah. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, well, gold has gone down over the last 2 months, but it's gone down in relation to where the dollar is. You know, you would think gold would be getting slaughtered over the past couple of months. For example, you know, UUP is at its highest level, which means that the dollar is as strong as it has been since middle of last year, in September of last year. So in the strongest it's been in a full year. And if you look at gold, you know, it's come down a little bit, but you're not near where it was even at the end of last year. Still well above that level. So
is gold going to go lower? Well, it could. If the dollar continues to strengthen, it could.
But if it's buy the rumor, sell the news on the dollar, which meaning that everyone buys the dollar ahead of the ECB QE announcement, then, you know, maybe that's over.
Yeah,
maybe the strength of the dollar is mostly behind us.
Yeah. And just so you know, that we at KPP have a pretty good exposure to gold. It's served us well this year so far.
Yep.
And we haven't had a pleasant month or two right now. But, you know, still for the year, it's served us well. And so we still have that position. So we're not that negative on it. Yeah.
I still think it's a buying opportunity.
Never know. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What is on your mind? Let's go talk to Doug in San Diego. How you doing, Doug?
Good. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Hey, just had a little strategy question for you. Beginning of the year, you know, had made quite a bit of money like everybody over the previous 5 years.
Yep.
And things started to look maybe a little fragile. So I've been taking money off the table as things rally over the last 6 months, and I've got myself down to 25% invested, which kind of seems like the wrong move. This market's pretty amazing in its strength, and just wanted to find out what your viewpoint would be. I'm in my mid-50s, and this is my 401k money for the most part, so don't really need to touch it for 10 or 15 years, let's say, and you know, I've always left it fully invested, no matter what, ups, downs, 2008, whatever. But just got a little nervous after such a great rally, and I don't want to do anything stupid like, you know, jump back in and then have a collapse. But don't want to miss the ride either.
Right.
Just maybe would like to hear your comments on strategy.
Well, I would tell you to be patient. I might, because you're 75% in cash. I might suggest that you maybe dollar cost average back in slowly. Maybe put on, if you can, if you have availability in your portfolio, maybe to put on a small gold position to help protect yourself against a downfall.
Sure.
the market is going to have a normal reaction at some point, but it could be next year. You know,
yeah.
We don't know. I don't know. I wish I did, Doug, but I did the same thing as you did. I mean, we slowly took profits because it just seemed like the prudent thing to do after, you know, a long bull market. I don't know if you heard the show yesterday.
Well,
but
I think it's less to do with the returns as the valuations. Valuations are just not attractive.
Yeah, stock prices are high. I mean, I was looking at just yesterday Amazon. Amazon, which is a great company. I mean, Amazon's growing great and everything, but does it deserve a 892 PE?
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah.
Well, that's just one company, but you know, you can look at across the board metrics overall. Pretty much on our market is the most expensive in the world. And, you know, so I think it is prudent to be careful, but at the same time, you know, taking too much off the table can be detrimental as well. So I think you should be patient, but, you know, you see a 5-10% drop in the market, buy a little something.
Yeah. So, Doug, just be a little bit patient, okay?
Yeah.
But, you know, you need to start trickling back in.
Don't be scared into the market. A lot of people get scared into the market.
Yeah, don't be scared. That's a good point, Justin. Don't be scared back into the market, just like you shouldn't be scared out of the market. Okay?
Don't use emotions.
Thanks. Appreciate the call, Doug. If you live in Northern California and haven't been thinking about a portfolio checkup, well, I'll be in San Jose September 17th. These meetings are formal and strictly informative. I'll have some suggestions for you to take away, of course. If you like, I can tell you about some of our KPP financial investment programs. Most people find these helpful, and I'm glad to do it for a limited number of our listeners. So if you can do it, if you want to meet with me, it's again on the 17th of September. If you'd like to schedule an hour, just go to investtalk.com, click on the make an appointment little icon, button, whatever you want to call it, and we'll work out the details.
You're listening to Invest Talk with portfolio manager Steve Peasley. Older Americans might hear about opportunities to sell their existing life insurance for cash in transactions known as life settlements. There's much to learn before you do. Call and ask Steve about it. 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's go talk to Oscar in San Jose. How you doing, Oscar?
Hi, Steve. Pretty good.
Thanks. Good.
I just wanted to get your guys' opinion on rare earth metals, and in particular, Molycorp. It's at a pretty good price right now, and I was just wanting to get your guys' opinion.
When you say it's at a very good price, please explain that.
Just because you
look at the chart.
Are you saying because it's $1.72 a share that's a good price?
Yes.
Okay. Remember, always, the price of a stock has nothing to do with whether that stock is at a good price. What has something to do with that a good price is how much earnings are they going
to
make.
What's the price of the stock in relation to earnings, in relation to cash flow, in relation to the value of that company? And the question is Molycorp worth $1.72 a share or more, or is it worth less? And there are far more stocks that are expensive that trade for less than $5 than there are stocks that are
cheap
that are over $500. You see what I'm saying?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So never look at a stock and say it's trading for $1 something or $2 something cents and saying that's a good price. That's the last thing you look at. You know, you look at what they earn, what their business model is, what their trajectory of their business is first before you ever say, okay, well, what's the price that they're trading for? Because Molycorp could do 100-for-1 reverse split tomorrow and be worth $100 a share stock. Doesn't mean it's worth any more, any less.
Okay, now let's talk about some of the fundamentals. They're going to lose $1.06 a share this year, after losing about the same amount last year, and they're going to lose 43 cents a share next year. So the bottom line is improving as far as they're losing less money. At the same time, sales have been going down. Now, this is a Molycorp mines and process rare earth ores. And one of the reasons why they even exist is because before Molycorp, and 80-90+% of all rare earth metals was coming out of China. And they seemed like they felt like there was a strong opportunity here. But, you know, there's a lot of insiders buying. Mm-hmm. They think they're going to succeed at some point. But it's going to lose money. So
And they have a lot of debt.
They do have a lot of debt. So, Oscar, this would be a very risky play. And if you're going to do it, make sure you do it with just a little bit of your money, money that you don't mind losing all of it, because that could happen. Because you could also have a huge winner. You know, it's either going to go out of business or be a huge winner.
Yeah, and to stay in business so far, they have to issue a lot of debt and issue a lot of shares. In 2009, they had 39 million shares outstanding, and right now they have 206 million shares outstanding. So they're issuing a lot of debt, they're issuing a lot of shares, and they're losing money and destroying shareholder value in the process. It's not a type of company I want to be involved with.
No.
And that's the reason it's gone from a high a few years ago.
It got up to $79 in 2011.
Yeah, almost $80 a share. Now it's at $1.72. So it's lost. Anybody who bought it up there lost 95%+ of the value of their money. So
just make sure it's with risk money that you don't mind losing.
Yeah, I wouldn't buy it. I wouldn't touch it.
I wouldn't buy it either. Not here. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Thank Oscar. You. Appreciate the call. And that's a very good lesson to learn, everybody. The price of the stock has nothing to do whether it's a good buy or a good value.
Yeah.
Just because of the price, and you can buy lots of shares because it's a dollar stock. Oh, well, that's exciting. No.
And a lot of people, they think that oh, well, this company is trading for $54 a share, and this other company is trading for $54 a share. Well, they're valued the same. They cost the same. Guess what? No, that's not true. They have different amount of shares outstanding. Both companies can trade for $54 a share, but one can be a big mega cap company like a Microsoft, and another could be a small podunk company that most people have never heard of. But their companies and their values are very, very different.
When the next housing bust hits, we get to blame bankers. Now, this is an article at MarketWatch by Philip Doom, and I'm not sure like
Philip Doom?
Doom. D-O-O-M.
Ooh, Doom. Okay.
Or is that Dorn? Doom, it looks
it's
like.
It's Van Doom. Philip Van Doom.
Yeah, Doom.
He's obviously like, Dutch.
I like Doom.
Okay, he's Van Doom.
Anyways, he's blaming the banks because Wells Fargo, who has a majority or a large share of the mortgage market out there, is unwilling to lend to lower-income borrowers and those with relative low credit scores. Now, remember, a bank's in business to make money. So why would they not want to lend money? Of course they would want to lend money, but they want to make a profit on it. So they have decided not to lend money to low-income borrowers and low credit scores. So, well, you have to talk to them and find out why. And guess what? They have talked to them and found out why, and this is why they're doing it. They're saying that if you guys, this is a quote, if you guys want to stick with this program of pulling back, what does that mean?
Putting back,
anytime, anyway, whatever, that's fine. We're just not going to make those loans, and that there's going to be a whole bunch of Americans that are underserved in the mortgage market.
And what he's talking about is all of these lawsuits that Fannie and Freddie have stuck the big banks with, Wells Fargo's of the world, J.P. Morgan's, Bank of America, saying that you created these loans, right? All these banks, they create these loans, and they're Fannie and Freddie-backed mortgages, right? And basically, the Fannie and Freddie are saying the mortgages that you created were not good loans, and you were negligent. You did all these things wrong, and this is why... You know, you now have to pay for the losses. The banks are paying are being forced to pay for the losses of Fannie and Freddie, because Fannie and Freddie is saying they didn't do what they should have done.
So Fannie and Freddie are saying that they have to repurchase the loans
back to
the bank.
And that's what he's saying, putting it back, saying, oh, these are supposed to be our loans? No. You need to take these back. You need to be on your balance sheet, and you get to take the losses. You get to ride the ups and downs.
So who's really to blame? Are the banks to blame? Well, of course, they shoulder their portion of the blame.
Yep.
But you can't blame them from looking forward and saying, you know what? We don't want to have that happen again.
Yeah.
We want to be more secure and safe in our business model, and therefore, we're not going to loan to people that have bad credit. And this is going to hurt. This is going to hurt the mortgage business, going to hurt the home buyers and sellers business, because it's one less. And it's just not Wells Fargo. It's all of them.
Yeah. And
or J.P. Morgan. Or
Morgan, the CEO of J.P. Morgan, it's Jamie Dimon, on a July conference call said their bank's volume of loans insured by the Federal Housing Administration was way down, the FHA, and that banks had lost a tremendous sum of money on these type of loans. And so, you know, they're seeing that they don't want this to happen again. And if they want to be able to make money and move on, not make money and look over their shoulder and say, okay, well, we made some money, but we might have to come back and pay for some of this.
So they're going to keep more loans on their balance sheet. Okay, if they're going to do that, that means there's less money to loan out. I mean, it's a domino effect. It's just the way it is. I don't think you can say, you know, as this article titled implies, the next housing bust will be blamed on the bankers.
Yeah, I don't blame the banks.
No,
I mean, they need to make money, and they're conforming to what Fannie and Freddie are saying. To me, it's Fannie and Freddie's fault that they didn't put the necessary guidelines in to make sure that the loans that were created under their umbrella were good loans.
Yeah.
They didn't put enough guidelines in place, and then when everything falls apart, they say, well, you should have had these guidelines.
And didn't Fannie and Freddie have some responsibility? When they bought the loans from these banks, are you telling me they had no responsibility to make sure? Shouldn't they have the knowledge? Remember, they're in this business, too.
Yeah, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, they should know what they're doing.
Yeah, they've gave parameters to the banks.
And they said, this is the loans we want.
Yeah. Here's
okay.
Our parameters. Well, guess what? Your parameters weren't good enough. And why is that the bank's fault? They followed your parameters.
Yeah. Interesting, though. Let's go to James in San Diego. How are you doing, James?
Hi, Steve. I was just wanted to call you. You were talking about the low-price stocks. And do you have any information on this particular set, VOIL, Virtus?
Well, it's not coming up on my fundamental data screen, so I'm getting...
Well, that's
is that Virtuous Oil and Gas Corp?
Yeah, and I understand. I think it's on the peak sheet. It's on the over-the-counter.
Yeah,
we don't get any data on OTC.
Yeah, it's
stocks.
A penny stock, and one we don't really have any information, James, so I can't give you any information about the company that's reasonable. Yeah, I don't have it. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it, though. Thank you. Grandparents scam. Time for InvestTalk personnel. Or personal, whichever you want to call it. It's a new thing we're going to be doing, a day-to-day money decisions that impact everybody's lives. We're going to talk about scams that just don't die, just won't die. And here are three of them. Grandparents scams. Older people are getting scammed all the time. But here's one that involves someone calling an elderly person, claiming to be his or her grandchild, and that the kid is in trouble. They need money to get out of trouble. Believe it or not, that works. I can't believe it'll work, but it does.
I mean, I just know my great-grandparents, my grandparents, I could see that happening, especially in their very elderly years when a lot of times they might have Alzheimer's or dementia. And you say a name, and it's your grandson or granddaughter, and they're all for it.
They want to help.
Yeah.
Another one, IRS phone calls. If someone calls you on the phone and said they're the IRS and that you messed up their taxes, or they're trying to clarify something in your taxes, and they start asking you for information, big red flag. The IRS does not call. Okay, they send you letters, and you call them. You always call them to clarify something. Don't let them call you.
And they don't email either. So don't if you get an email from the quote-unquote IRS, don't think that's legitimate either.
Yeah. And how about Microsoft Support Center? scam. Yeah. This involves someone calling you saying that your computer has been infected with malware. Okay? And the support staff at Microsoft needs to remotely access your computer to remove the virus.
So people fall for this?
I guess so. It's third popular. Never let someone have remote access to your computer, because they'll download every bit of information that's ever in there. I have had personal experience with people getting signatures that you might have an electronic signature in your computer, and they can duplicate it exactly. Don't do it. Don't let people have it. Anyways, those are three scams that you need to be aware of.
That will never die.
Yeah, they're not dying.
The grandparents one definitely will never die, because there's always going to be older people who have dementia with grandkids. And IRS phone calls, I don't think the IRS is going away. So that's always a good way to get in. And then Microsoft support, that might change a little bit. Might not be Microsoft, but it'll always be somebody trying to get into your computer.
Yep. And that's Invest Talk Personal. So we're going to do these kinds of things every so often. If you have a question on this topic, or you have some scam you'd like to share with us, I'd love to hear it. Please get to us at 888-99-CHART. You can also send me a note that will go directly to me. Just click on the Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com. If you want to, you can say Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com. Or what's it, the handle? Is that what you call
it?
The
handle, yeah.
The handle at InvestTalk, our Twitter handle, at InvestTalk with two T's at Twitter.
What every investor needs is reliable knowledge and effective tools. Every market participant looks for signs of a weakening or strengthening stock market. Steve has a short ETF list that you might be interested in. If you're an InvestTalk insider, join up for free right now on InvestTalk.com.
Hi, Steve. This is Dan in Virginia. I love the show. I listen on the podcast. I want to say I consider myself to be an intermediate investor. I did read your book, and I found it very helpful and insightful, though, to get your perspective on things. I had a question about ALLT, Allet Communications. I actually owned this several months ago, and I just sold most of it a few days ago after its recent run-up. I like this sector, and I would like to get back in it. I'm concerned, though, because it's an Israeli company and because of the uncertainty in that region. The other thing I'm looking at is Procera, PKT, which is also in that sector. Do you think it would be better to get into that on a pullback or stick with Allet? Thanks a lot. Bye.
Okay. Allet Communications Limited is out of Israel. Israel, provider of network optimization products for service and e-providers to manage network traffic and internet access. And the growth rate has been kind of erratic in the last couple of years. Right now, it's on a pretty good trajectory, up 33% last quarter sales. Quarter before that, up 17. Quarter before that, up 3. And the two quarters before that, it shrank. So it's going in the right direction. And the subsequent earnings are going up 30 cents per share this year from 12 cents last year, and then 59 cents next year. So it's moving in the right direction as far as sales, and there's no debt, which is good. So, and the stock has fallen, probably because of all the turmoil.
Yeah, and the chart does not look strong at all. It fell beginning of August pretty rapidly from 13 down to 10 and a little above $10 a share. That's a pretty big drop. And it's really just hung around this between $10 and $11 ever since. And the fundamentals are, I think, pretty poor. Return on equity is negative. It's only had 1 year where the return equity was positive. That was 2011. Its cash flow is negative. You know, all the trajectories except for, you know, sales aren't really looking that
great. Yeah, so the increase in sales is not falling down to the
bottom line.
Yeah. So how are they increasing their earnings? Yeah. They've got to be doing something.
Yeah. I would stay away from it.
Yeah. I would stay away. That is a lot.
Too inconsistent for me.
You can still get through to us right now with your questions. Don't save it up until tomorrow. You call us now at 888-99-CHART.
Thanks for being a podcast subscriber, and we do want to hear your investing experiences. We've all grown over the years through our experiences, good and bad.
You get to be anonymous, and the rest of us will enjoy knowing that we're not the only one to make a turn when maybe we should have gone straight. So we hope you'll join us on the podcast. Thanks for listening.
This is Invest Talk. Steve is open to any money matter from annuities to life insurance. That's why we're here. 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So something very important is happening in October concerning Chinese stocks, all of Chinese stocks. Starting in October, overseas money managers, we would be considered overseas money managers, by the way, just in case you're wondering. Overseas money managers will be able to buy Chinese companies listed on the Shanghai Stock Exchange via the Hong Kong Stock Market Exchange. China's decision to open up its stock markets is to outsiders. Remember, before you, if you wanted to buy, you could buy Chinese stocks listed on the Hong Kong or Shanghai Exchange, but you had to go through this process. It would take months to do it. Now they're going to let you buy them. It's opened up to anybody who wants to buy them. And what will this do? Well, why is China doing it? Well, because they want to be eventually, you know, an international free market, a different place where money flows to their markets. And, of course, this will open up their companies to have access to foreign cash. You know, maybe they want to issue bonds. Maybe they want to, you know, there's different things they can do now if these stocks are publicly traded around the world. Now, this will cause a surge and a breath of new life in their market, the Chinese market. Mind you, the market is down 60% from its 2007 highs.
60.
It is up this year, but that's not meaning that they've been very strong for all that length of time. So this is probably another incentive to try to drive money to their market to get it to recover. Now, one thing you need to be aware of, if you're thinking about buying stocks, is that, remember, they don't necessarily operate under GAAP rules, general accounting principle rules. There's not a lot of corporate governance standards there. And we've seen that in ADRs of Chinese companies traded on our exchange, even after they have to comply with GAAP.
I wonder if they're trying to get more excitement into the stock market in their country, because so many people are, the go-to investment is always real estate.
Right.
And there's so much oversupply of real estate in the country, and there's really no need for them to throw more money at it. You know, individuals throw more money at it, and so maybe they want to rebalance their whole investment system.
I really think that's part of it, because even if you're a Chinese citizen, you don't really have very much access to the stock market.
Yeah.
You buy real estate to try to gain.
Well, they can buy the stock. It's just not exciting for them because, like you said, it's been down 60%, and there's really the excitement's gone.
Okay, let's get to one more listener line question if we can. 888-99-CHART is our in-time number. Jerry called us from San Jose.
I'm going to ask you the next logical question. What sectors and or companies are you guys watching that are extreme buying opportunities? Thanks, guys.
Well, we kind of save that information for our own clients. Mm-hmm. We don't, want to share that kind of information. So we're not going to answer that question on the air here. I can tell you this, sector rotation is very important, and sectors, they do rotate. Remember at the beginning of the year how bad the social media and biotech industries got hit? Do you remember that? They got crushed at the beginning of the year, and then they've pretty much made a pretty good recovery, not all the way back to where they were. So you have to just be aware that there is sector rotation going on. And what are the next sectors to move up? Well, isn't that kind of something that we'd like to keep close to the vest here?
I don't think social media or biotech are in that areas that we really like. But we probably don't want to say which ones we do.
No, we really don't want to share that. But thank you for the call. If you ask about individual stocks, be happy to answer that question.
Yeah.
If anybody asks us, well, what are you buying now? We won't answer that question. What are you buying for your clients? We won't answer that question. Any open-ended questions like that, we can't do it. We really can't. But if you ask about anything specific, be happy to answer it. Now, this week we had a big economic calendar, a lot of data coming out. You had the ISM, Institute Supply Management, report both for non-manufacturing and manufacturing. Both those sectors were up 59 and 59.6, which anything above 50 is expanding, and those were up. Construction spending was up. Factory orders were up. Motor vehicle sales were up. Now tomorrow we're going to have jobs report. Probably going to be pretty decent. We'll see. I think it'll be within...
What are analysts expecting?
220 or so. I don't know. Somewhere in that range.
Yeah, 215 to 220.
So, you know, so the market has, you know, you're surprising with all this good news, the market's not higher than it has been this week. Not surprising. Or maybe it's not surprising. No time for more. Try our new InvestTalk Risk Analyzer. Lots of our listeners are doing it. You can use it for free at InvestTalk.com. It will help you learn your true tolerance for investment risks. Really kind of a neat little tool. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, along with Justin Klein. And for everyone at KPP Financial, we hope you'll join us again on the next InvestTalk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.